All right, and we are joined here today with Jessica Rossine. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us on the Duluth Rundown podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, really. I'm honored.
Yeah, super cool. Let's start with some of our classic kind of start questions and how you got started in running / fitness world, triathlon, all that stuff, just kind of being an endurance athlete. How do you get started?
My whole life, I feel like I've been very active from a young girl, always in dancing, and that turned into figure skating. Okay. Then figure skating got a little too expensive for the family, so it was like, okay, what are my other options? And that was basketball. Then I wasn't really that great at basketball. Then I tried hockey, was pretty good at that, and then was always doing t-ball, that turned into softball, and then I was always loved swimming, so I started swimming in middle school and was kind of just like dabbling in everything. So I've always been super active. By the time I got to high school, my main sports were softball and hockey year-round and tennis in the fall. So I have that background of just wanting to move my body, being a super competitive person, loving sports. And then when I got to college, I'd always thought I'd play like D1 softball somewhere, but that didn't happen. So once I got to UMD, trying to figure out like, okay, can I walk on to a team? What are my options? Started doing club sports right away. Then one of my, she wasn't a roommate, but I kind of consider a roommate. We were like neighbors in the dorms, so we got pretty close. And she got me to join the track team at UMD, and that was kind of a funny story. That's what I feel like I credit to April, the one that got me into running. She found a really attractive guy that was joining the track team, so she's like, Jess, you should like join with me. And I kind of laughed. I'm like, I literally have never ran really in my life. Like, the extent of my running is maybe a little bit around the hockey rink for a warm-up. And in tennis, we'd have to like run around the courts or just do like some warm-up drills. But really, no running. Nothing more than like a mile. And she emailed the coach for us. And he emailed us back like, great, come in. I'd love to have a meeting with you. So we went to his office. And I remember just being like really nervous because I know nothing about running. Like, so he's asking April all of the questions because she ran in high school. And, of course, she has all the answers and knows her PRs. I didn't even know what a PR was my freshman year of college. And he's like, so, Jessica, what did you run in high school? And I just kind of, I lied. I'm like, well, I ran the mile because that was the last thing that I had to test out in high school, you know?
You didn't mention it was gym class. You just said
Yes. Gym class, mile test. I knew I ran like a six something. And so he's like, well, what are some of like your PRs and times? And I just rambled. I'm like, oh, you know, I really like don't remember. But like, we know runners and endurance athletes do not forget their PRs.
Right.
Exactly.
I remember my 10K PR from like years ago.
To the second, right?
Yeah. And so he was just like, great, Joy, great to have you.
Nice. Wow, just like that.
I think like, this is my perception of it is just like maybe they, I think isn't there that rule in college sports, like you can bring more, you have to kind of have equal men and women. So I think there was like a want for more men. And so like, yeah, just any girls come.
Yeah.
I don't know. I could be way wrong on that.
Yeah, sure.
But we were there and sent us the schedule. Like, here's the first workout. We showed up. We went for, what isn't it like a three? Isn't it like the Snow White Loop from campus? I think it's like 3 mile-ish run.
Yeah.
And I show up and all the ladies have their, you know, run getup. The shoes, the tights, all of it. And I have like just old tennis shoes that I happen to own and baggy sweatpants.
Oh no. Sweatpants. Yeah. Oh no.
So we're running the loop and it's winter and, you know, by the time we get back to the field house, like my sweatpants are wet up to my knees.
Yeah.
And I made it, you know, I did it. But I was just
longest run ever.
Ever.
Yeah.
But I remember just being just a bit embarrassed of like,
Well, if everyone kind of looks the same, just in their attire, you know, and you're like the odd one out, kind of like,
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely intimidating to be.
Very intimidating.
I think a lot of people have been there in that position too, you know?
Yeah. And then, so I got over that embarrassment and like, okay, like I did enjoy that. That was nice. Like we chatted during the run and I was able to keep up. So
yeah, good.
Maybe this would be something, you know, I'll try it. I'm always open to trying something.
Right.
Show up for the next practice and it was 2200s.
Oof.
Ow. I don't even know. I have no concept of what that kind of like speed interval workout is.
Right.
I think I almost, yeah. That's like the first time in a long right. time that I had almost vomited from a workout because I'm so competitive. I'm trying to keep up. Yeah. Plus I just have no running background or skill.
Like so to it evenly and stuff. Yeah.
And you guys were probably doing this indoors.
Yeah. Yep. It was in the field house.
It was in the field house. So you went from your longest run ever to what the next day doing
it probably was like the day after, yeah,
something like that, to running 20 by 200s for the first time ever.
Yeah, yeah. So I gave April a little grief for that.
Yeah.
Like, what have you gotten me into? But there's part of me that, like, because it's so foreign and so challenging, that I just want to continue to give it a shot and give it a go.
Yeah.
And then fast forward a little bit more into the season, and now it's like indoor track season, and I get to go to one of the meets. And I'm assigned the 800. And again, I know nothing about nutrition, running, pacing. So I think my stepdad was like, well, I've got some goos at the house. And he's like done a few marathons. And so like, he doesn't really know it.
Right.
So
right.
I was like, sure, why not? And I think like before the 800, I took two goos.
Oh.
Because I had no idea.
Right.
I remember just, like, feeling like that was disgusting. I think my stomach was a little bit of, like, what's happening?
Yeah. Plus the butterflies, perhaps.
Yeah.
You know, I would have to imagine, too.
And the gun goes off. We're racing. I didn't finish fast. I didn't finish fast, but I didn't finish last either.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit, like, I think that's where the bug really, like, got to me, like, okay, I really like this.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And even though it still feels super foreign and I'm still very intimidated, but I like this challenge. So finish out the season. That same friend April started dating another guy who was into triathlons. And at that point at UMD, like, we were both studying exercise science, and she's like, well, there's a tri team here. We can volunteer and, like, be a part of it. So, again, I was like, sure, why not?
Mm-hmm.
And got involved with the tri team at the university. And that's what really, like, kind of started introducing me to the world of triathlon.
Yeah.
And in Duluth, I feel like a lot of Duluthians, almost like all triathlon Duluthians, go to Timberman.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, the first year that I went to that, I just planned on, like, I brought all my stuff, but I was just going to cheer people on, maybe bike the course a little bit, run a little bit, and, like, hop in the water once the swim is done.
Yeah.
But someone got me a race entry, and so I'm like, again, why not? Let's just do it.
Right.
And I did really well
uh-huh.
in my first race. And so I had signed up for, like, a few other. I think I did Turtle Man that year. And then our local races, and still I continue to do well.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I was swimming with the swim program at UMD as well.
Nice.
And Ted Patton was like, "Hey Jess, like, there's this opportunity to potentially, like, make the Team USA team, and then that could even, like, get you to Worlds."
Wow.
And I was, like, so intrigued by that. Like, okay.
Worlds.
How do I do that?
It sounds very flashy.
Totally. And I always had this dream. Like, I still have the dream. Like, what sport? I'm going to be 35 this December, but there's still this little part deep inside of me. Like, what sport can I do to make it to the Olympics? Like, I still have this passion. Like, maybe one day I can still make it, even though, like, what's the average age for most sports? Like, I'm probably, like geriatric in the Olympic world, right? I don't know.
Probably, yeah.
But still, maybe one day.
Yeah.
I'll, like, find a sport that I can make it to. So I thought, well, gosh, like, okay, yeah, Worlds. Maybe I could, like, this is my ticket to be, like, an Olympic triathlete.
Right.
And so Ted was like, go to the USAT website. They'll have all the information. I know you'll probably have to do a regional championship within the Midwest region.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, that'll qualify you to national championships. And then from there, you can qualify to Worlds. So this was now my second season of triathlon. And
And that's when you start getting serious of like, yeah, I know what a goo is or a gel is now.
Yeah, totally, like very tuned in on
the gear and stuff. Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't say like very tuned in yet, but like very aware and figuring it out.
Yeah. Aware, I think, is huge. Just like, oh, like better bike makes you faster. Oh, wetsuit helps a lot, right?
Right.
Like
that
sort of stuff, definitely.
And then starting to get that cumulative experience of how do you pace yourself. And I'm sure you two can relate too, of like, I feel like it just, each year you have that, what you came off of the last season, you continue to just grow and grow and get that cumulative fitness. And
not going to try that move again.
Right? And just that, like, being a more mature racer and having that experience of knowing, I mean, I'd love to hear probably like another time of your experience. I feel like that could be another topic of just like that first year experience where, especially as a very competitive person, like if somebody passes you, my first instinct is like, oh no, you don't.
Yeah,
I'm going to go after you. But you're like, now I let them pass.
Right.
And I know my pace.
Right. Right.
And most of the time, by the end of the race, I've passed that person.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Cause like you just know what you can do and consistency. That strategy works for me.
Right.
And knowing those right points where, okay, I know myself well enough, I can push, totally. And I know that I'll still be able to finish.
Right. I think anytime that you're new to an endeavor, but we'll just keep it in the athletic world, your first year or two, you're just taking in so much information because you don't know what to eliminate that which doesn't work for you. And after a while, you learn what to eliminate. And that's a big part of it, too. Not only knowing kind of your limits or your abilities, but knowing what doesn't work for you, because it can be information overload and at times a little intimidating when you're brand new to running or triathlon or something, because you're taking in so much information, and then you'll find at some point it doesn't apply to you.
Yeah.
Too.
It's like, I'm just trying to run here.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Tell me what to do. I'm just trying to run here.
Right.
It is such a big difference of like running. Okay, you could geek out on shoes and, you know, watches and training, that, but then you take the step into the triathlon world.
Oh, man.
You have the technology of wetsuits. Okay, there's different millimeters of them, and like one's legal and one's not.
The geek out factor increases big time. And then bikes, the bike world is.
You know, I'm embarrassed. Like, I've raced for over 7 years, and I'm still learning, like, all the little gadgets that you can do for your bike.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Power meters. It's literally, it's, like, endless.
Yeah.
And every year, there's something new on the market for bikes, too. So it's hard to keep up with that.
I feel like it was maybe, like, year five of triathlon, like, was the first year that I learned that there are different gears or that that you can use for like different courses. Like if you're on a more hilly course, you can totally change out everything.
Right.
I'm like, what? That's even a thing? How am I just learning about this?
Yeah. So you went to UMD. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Fridley, Minnesota for the most of my life. Before that, moved around a lot. I was born in the UK. Both of my parents were stationed over there in the Air Force, so they had lived out there for a few years before I was born. I think I was there for maybe a year and a half, 2 years. Then we moved back to the States. We lived in Chicago for a little bit. Then after that, we moved to Seattle, Washington, and lived there for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then when I was in first grade, that's when we moved back to Minnesota. My parents were both from the metro, so we settled in Fridley, Minnesota.
Cool.
And that's where I ended up staying elementary, middle, and high school. Then in 2004 is when I graduated. And out of the two schools that I had been accepted to, coming to Duluth and visiting the UMD campus, it felt more like home.
And you haven't left.
I haven't left. And I don't think it would take something huge to ever make me leave Duluth. And even if that, like, if there is an unpassable experience that I had to take, I would still come back to Duluth, I think. Like, Duluth will always be home for me, no matter where life takes me.
Yeah. So, I think Tony and I know you more, which is, I guess, why you're on the podcast today as runner, triathlete.
Yeah.
I guess I'm kind of curious hearing your story. How you feel about softball and some of these other sports that you're obviously so passionate about, or was it kind of just a shift towards the running triathlon, which, I mean, I think there are obviously more opportunities to compete and excel at those types of sports, like, say, post-collegiately or even during college, versus softball or, I mean,
I agree
you have
with
like
you.
A beer league or something, right? Besides that, like,
yeah,
right?
I feel like one of my favorite sounds in the whole world is when you hit the ball like perfectly and it's just like everything's in sync from how your body feels to that connection of the ball to bat and then like your power and just seeing the ball take off. Like that is still to this day one of my favorite feelings and sounds in the world.
Yeah.
I feel like one of my first passions was probably figure skating. I just love that feeling of gliding on the ice. Mm-hmm. And I could still to this like day just spend hours twirling around on the ice.
Cool.
So when I got into hockey, I actually really love hockey. That's probably one of my, like, I still triathlon and running became like number one. I would say they're like pretty tied, but running kind of maybe pulls ahead a little bit because that's where I'm most strong.
Yeah.
But hockey's right underneath there. And it's more just that feeling of being able to glide on the ice and push. And I think maybe it would be change now that I'm a little older, but I feel like my younger self actually enjoyed being able to be a little aggressive and getting to like work out some angst on the ice.
Right. Definitely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah, I'm with you. I grew up playing a lot of baseball and then eventually softball when, you know, I was at that age after high school and stuff. And I'm the same way. Like if given the choice, if I could play baseball now, if I could play baseball all day or go for like a 6-hour run, I might actually choose baseball because to me, like the greatest sports feeling is like cleanly fielding a ground ball and throwing somebody out. I was a middle infielder.
Yeah.
So, I just love that. I can't do it anymore. My shoulder wouldn't let me throw and I wouldn't be able to run necessarily around the bases the way that you would want to. Mm-hmm. But, I miss that terribly. But with, these endurance sports is, they're just a classic lifetime sport, you know.
I agree.
That's what's so nice about it. Team sports and things, basketball, baseball, those kinds of things, they kind of fade away a little bit as you get older just because of lots of reasons, but typically it's more of a physical reason. But to be able to run and swim and ski and bike and all that stuff, you can do that until you're, you know, 80s or 90s or whatever.
I think when I look back at that, you just saying that it makes me feel as though running and triathlon, it... Not that it saved my life, but it definitely, I think I was having a little bit of an identity crisis. Like, my identity was in being a team sport person. Mm-hmm. And okay, now in college, like, the only thing that I could see for softball or hockey is more like beer leagues. And that actually, like, is not that fun for me.
Yeah.
Right.
And so
especially being competitive, sorry to interrupt. Yeah. But
no,
I mean,
totally.
If that's the main driver for wanting to participate, let's say.
It is a big driver and like
you don't want to be the weirdo in the beer league, like hyper competitive, right?
I tried a few of them. Like my friends were like, Jess, you're really great at softball, like come join us. And I think that's why I didn't enjoy it. It was the competitive level. I'm like, I am getting too worked up and I'm trying to like, I'm embarrassed myself because like sometimes I'd have that outburst like, what?
Yeah. That's exactly how that? I was too in the beer league, softball. I was the exact same way. And I was embarrassed by it. Like, I couldn't help it. I step on a field like that and I want to win. And it just makes me mad if things don't go my way.
Right. Yeah.
It's bad.
So it was really amazing to like find running and to find triathlon to be able to have this outlet to work my body, challenge myself. And I think I really enjoyed that switch of it's all in my control.
Mm-hmm.
How I take the time to work on this, the time I put into it, and I liked that switch to that inner competitiveness of like
PRs.
What can I do?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And how far can I push my body? And it's kind of fun to do that.
If things don't go well, you can't blame a teammate, you can't blame a ref, you know, or an official or anything. It's you. You're the one that made the mistake, so you fix it and you learn from it and you go. And I like that aspect about it.
There's so many like real life scenarios too that come up so often that I can use a triathlon or a running analogy or experience that applies to a non-athletic event in my life.
Totally.
And like having, I feel like it helps me be able to handle that and work through it a little bit easier. I don't know if any of you have had a similar experience or can like relate to that.
Yeah, for sure.
If I could do that, like at Ironman or something, I can do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
If I can get through that.
Oh, I mean, like, so how many times a week would you say you have a run to do and you kind of don't want to do it, but you do it anyway?
Yeah,
You know, just everyday little things like that. I mean, that's how life goes. There's millions of things that you don't necessarily want to do, but you get them done and you do it and you move on to the next thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, running every day is the same way.
Yeah. So, I agree with that.
So, you got into triathlons pretty shortly after getting into running, just in general. Did you continue your collegiate track career, or did that kind of phase out as you just became more passionate and involved with triathlons?
It definitely phased out after that first year. I think my sophomore year, I think I did more like practices, but then was starting to, I'm trying to remember, I hadn't been, April hadn't like asked me about tri team till maybe like the end of that year. But I struggled through college academically, and so that was actually more of the reason of having to cut back, because I was doing track. I had made the softball team, so I was able to walk onto the softball team, and I was playing club hockey. You know, in high school, I did it all and did decent academically, but getting to college, it didn't work that way. Yeah. So I had to make some decisions of, okay, I'm struggling with my grades. I can't take as much time as I did, and okay, what's gonna kind of make the cut? And the track team did, because I still loved hockey a little bit more. So club hockey was my thing throughout college, and dropped softball, dropped running, but I had found my love for running, so I was still able to do that. And April and I were still friends, but then she pulled me back into the endurance world, like, okay, now let's try triathlon.
So I think you, and I know the answer to this, but I think you left maybe some of our listeners on a cliffhanger. What happened with the world's
dream?
The dream.
Yeah,
in fact, I have a question regarding that, so fire away.
So second year of triathlon, I wanted to go do the South Beach Triathlon. In order to afford it, I got 10 women to join me, and that paid for my trip. Like, I trained them. We all went down as a group. We did South Beach. That was my first out of Minnesota race that I did, where I think I got third or something in my age group.
Nice.
And like, so on a bigger scale, more people, I'm like, okay, so that was the year I decided, okay, I'm going to try. Where's our regional championship? That was in Polk City, Iowa. It was the Midwest championship. Went down there. It was like a heat index, I think, of over 105. So they cut, and it's like this really, I don't even know where the body of water came from, but it's like in the middle of a cornfield. It was super hot and icky. So they even shortened the swim. The bike was still the 40K, but then it was a 5K run instead of a 10K. And I forget if I got like, I got third, second, or first. I actually don't remember. But I placed well enough at the regional qualifier to qualify for nationals. Nationals was in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Some of my girlfriends helped like fundraise for me to get me there. They were so passionate. I like still to this day, I'm like, damn, that was like, thank you so much for your support. Like really, that helped like just be the catalyst in this life-changing triathlon career. So flew down to Tuscaloosa, Alabama. That was another fun story. When I got off the plane, Gwen Jorgensen was there. And I, like, we made eye contact. I feel like we did.
And like, competitively, then, like, I see you.
Who's that? She looks really good.
She looks fast. Oh, no.
Actually, she very much is. Yeah. You know? And then I, like, flew down there by myself. There were some other Duluthians over there, so I'm thankful, like, they took me under their wing to kind of help me out, but one day I went down to the swim familiarization, and it was down on the river, and I saw Gwen there with like another, she's like, hey, you were at the airport with like, didn't you have like a dress and tennis shoes on? Cause I had forgot my flip flops. So I had like a very, you know, like loud fashion, long dress, tennis shoes. I was like, And so I talked to her for like a brief second.
Now,
knowing how much of a superstar she is, there's like a little bit of like starstruck, like I actually talked to her.
Sweet. That's pretty cool though. Gold medal in the Olympics. Yeah, that's no joke.
And then so race day, I think I got 14th or 15th at nationals overall, and to make Team USA you have to get 16th or better.
Nice.
So I took my spot for Worlds, which was in Beijing, China, and my same group of friends was like, okay, Jess, we're going to help you get there. And I did so many events to try to raise money to go there, because at this moment I was like, okay, yeah, maybe I can be an Olympian. Started working on, like, okay, what are the qualifications to get your pro card? Because, you know, in triathlon, it's actually quite complicated. I don't even know if I really get the point system of, like, getting your pro card, being able to start the ITU circuit to, like, get points to try to, like, get hope to make it to the Olympics. So it was, like, that was planted in my mind, though. Went to Beijing, and I think I did middle of the pack, like, overall within my age group. It was a very, like, humbling experience to compete on the world stage of, you know, being at the start line, and you hear all these different languages around you, and everybody has their, you know, representing their countries, and it was mind-blowing.
I mean, top tier of the world.
Yeah, really. Did okay, and then come season three, it was, okay, now how can I get that pro card? And I chased that so hard, like, signing up at that point, Lifetime Series, where it was an actual series, and they had, I think it was like 7 races, and, you know, they have a prize purse of 10,000 more, and if you get within a certain time of the top pro female athlete, like, you can start to make, like, A and B standards of swim, bike, run. So I tried to, like, I tried to do that for a couple years, and then it was really, like, the reality of, I am not a sponsored athlete. I have to, like, still pay for these trips. I have to pay for my life and, like, bills and food. So that started to become more of, like, okay, why don't I just, like, I'm going to drop the pro chase. That probably won't happen in my life. Maybe one day, but I just, I don't have the resources to try to attain that. And so I just, I switched to being competitive with myself and continuing to try to just race at an elite level. And then now it's been, has it been like 3 years since I've raced competitively? But I feel pretty good. Like, I ended my season, that last season, I got 10th in my age group in the world in Cozumel at World Championship there. And I got 10th in my age group at Nationals. So it was like, that was my ultimate goal, to, like, make podium on all of, on both of those races, and I did.
Cool. So was that the catalyst to say, you know, put the stream on hold, or did you kind of have that in your mind, and, like, podium would be a good kind of send-off?
I think a little bit of both. It just continued to get a little bit more challenging of, like, okay, where is triathlon going to take me? I've already been able to experience this. It's opened up so many doors of meeting so many amazing people that I'm still really great friends with today, and have amazing opportunities have come out of those friendships. But then starting to look at my career and where was I at there, and I wasn't really happy. I was not happy at all where I was. And so I needed to make the decision of, right now, is it going to be my career and switching to find happiness, because I'm really not happy? Or, you know, but I love triathlon, and I think that was always my out. You know, like, that was my stress reliever. That was, when I'm here, nothing else is happening except this. But then I'd go back to what I was doing for work, and I just hated it. So I needed to, I decided to stop triathlon after that last year, and it happened to, like, be a great year. But then just taking the next few years, now three years later, all the money that I haven't spent on triathlon, you know, I've been able to pay off my school loans, pay off my car. I was able to leave my job that I really hated and start my own business. So that was the trade-off for me, and I think kind of the bigger decision of, like, even though I really love this sport, but right now I feel like for longevity of happiness within my life, I think I need to make this pivot to be able to take on a new chapter.
I've never thought of it that way. Well, especially trying to become a professional athlete, which, you know, I guess not a lot of people even ponder, but that's an interesting thing to think of, is, like, you have your life to support being a pro athlete. Well, you want to be a pro athlete to support your life, you know, but how do you make that flip-flop, and obviously it's hugely challenging, especially on a niche sport like triathlon. Right. Yeah. I mean, this isn't like LeBron James.
Yeah. And I think then, like, going back to look at, like, Gwen Jorgensen in Rio when she won gold, I'm like, okay, let's face it. Even if I had the support to train my booty off,
yeah, 40 hours
I'm really, like,
something.
I'm good, but I'm not actually that good. And I can, it doesn't hurt to say that that's just, like, reality.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think even just placing 10th at Worlds, that puts you in, like, what, the top fraction of 1% in the world.
Yeah.
And then Gwen is the fraction of the fraction of the, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Everything has to line up. The training, the genetics,
it really makes you think about,
support.
Like, how good, really good professional, it's let alone just professional athletes, but then the top tier professional athletes and how incredibly good they are, whatever the sport, you pick it. And it's amazing to think if a guy around here runs, say, like a 15-minute 5K, he's, you know, he's a hero.
You're right.
A local hero.
Right.
You know, if he runs a 15-minute 5K, like, you know, he's not anywhere near a professional level.
Right.
You know, it's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible, the abilities of some human beings. It's whatever they choose. It's so cool.
It's interesting, too. Like, obviously, you're talented, Jess, and you have the results to back it up. But you wouldn't have ever gotten to Worlds if it wasn't the support group and fundraising.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's that component too. Like, you need the kind of the startup capital almost.
For sure. And triathlon is one of those sports. It's not just easy to, like,
you're right,
dive into. It's not just a pair of running shoes.
Right.
It's
the
running shoes. It's the bike.
The bike. Yeah.
Even like now the wetsuit technology is so advanced, like the wetsuit makes the difference.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you've got the skin in warmer temperatures, like that's going to give you the advantage. So it's definitely like money can make you a faster racer for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was your question, Tony, that you
had? Actually, it wasn't quite a Worlds question, but it was a triathlon one from before. And then we'll kind of switch maybe to some present day stuff. But I was doing some research, and you're probably our first guest who's ever been interviewed by ESPN.
Oh,
with your Cuba trip.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about that, because that to me is a really cool story.
Yeah, that again, like triathlon has just opened so many doors, and I've had so many phenomenal experiences through the sport of triathlon. So it was Christmas Eve. And I've already forgotten, it was like 4 years ago already, 4 or 5 years now, maybe 5. And I opened up my email, there was an email from USAT, like, want the opportunity to race in Cuba? I was like, yes. Again, I'm going to say yes to almost everything. I may be a little bit apprehensive now, like, if you're like, hey, Jess, you want to go do, like, an ultra with me? I might be like, I don't know. Wait, let me think.
Question. Okay.
Actually, I have one related to that, too, so remind me on that. I haven't. Yeah.
So, and it was like, you don't need to pay for anything now. Like, this is just holding a spot for inquiry. So I'm like, well, why not?
Yeah.
And I put my name down and signed up and went to bed. And then I think it was like a couple days later, I was like, okay, you are one of 25 people that got this spot.
Cool.
Here's what it would entail to like actually go race in Cuba. And so I signed up for the race and did all the things. And we, because it was such a small group, we had a representative from USAT that was working with USAT, the Olympic Committee, and the U.S. government to, like, make this all happen. So she was the one that got us, like, health insurance that we could use down there, set up everything so that we would prepare to go. We'd be prepared to go out there. Like, we got mailed official documents that were stamped by the government and the Olympic Committee to show to the Cuban government when we got to customs, like, we are allowed to be here, and here's all of our documentation. So that kind of felt special, like, oh, this is really cool.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Exclusive.
Yeah. And that was even such a bigger time in history when Obama was starting to open up relations with Cuba.
Right.
And so it was such a big time in our history, like first time ever to be there and to be, like, allowed to be there. But so that was a really interesting experience of even, like, figuring out travel, because in the U.S., like, you can't just book a flight to Cuba.
Right.
Yeah.
So we had to go through, and you can't just, like, book a hotel or find hotels or things there.
Yeah.
So I had to go through finding a Cuban airline that like would come up on our search on our internet.
Oh, wow.
And just hope that it was like real, because I mean, I didn't know. So I booked a flight from Minneapolis to Cancun, and then from Cancun, I booked a flight on Cubana Air from Cancun to Havana. And so that's how I got there. And I initially, like, through a European, like, hotels.com website, was able to book a hotel in Havana. But we had, like, a group, the 25 people that were allowed to go, we had all immediately, like, created a Facebook group, and we're starting to connect that way. One guy, I don't know how he found it, but he found a bike rental guy down there. And he was kind of our into, like, what to do, where to stay in Havana. And he was like, you do not want to stay at that hotel. Like, it's kind of creepy. So I have a friend. Like, more of the thing is, we would say it's like an Airbnb, but they call it a Casa Particular down there. And so we connected and stayed with her. And gosh, I don't even remember, but I want to say it was like less than $15 a night. That included breakfast.
Wow.
And the woman was so kind. I like immediately felt like she was my grandma or something. She just welcomed us in.
Yeah.
And that was, gosh, I could just probably do a whole podcast on just like just that experience alone.
Yeah.
Because we're new, this little conspiracy, I don't know if this is real, but one of the guys in our group was actually a U.S. diplomat, like within sports. So he would go to different countries, and that would be his assignment, is to create diplomacy through sport. And so he was a part of our group because he happened to be an endurance athlete as well.
Right.
And he kept saying there are so many little instances where, like, that's not a coincidence that these people were here. Or, like, one example, we were the guy that had rented us bikes. He helped train, like, a boys' cycling club. Uh-huh. And because Cuba can't get as many shipments or things, like, we brought a ton of bike equipment.
Oh, cool.
And, like, jerseys and things to help them out. And so they set up a bike ride with the boys. They met us at our casa. And then we rode probably, like, 20 miles out to this, like, their home. And they had a huge spread of food out for us.
Wow.
And we gave them all of this stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then on our way back, we were biking to Packet Pickup.
Uh-huh.
And we were riding by a school. And one of the guys in our group was waving, but then hit a rock and went over his handlebars.
Ooh.
And broke his collarbone. Oh, but, like, within minutes, it kind of was this, like, fancy, you know, 50s car. Came out these two big dudes with, you know, their Panama shirts on. Like, perfect English. And actually being down there, I was like, really not a lot of people were speaking English at all.
Yeah.
I don't know why I expected there to be, but it was, like, really no English at all.
Yeah.
But these two guys knew, like, perfect English.
Sure.
And their one diplomat was like, I'm pretty confident that they're, like, part of the government just kind of, like, following
us. Yeah, just kind of hanging.
Oh, sure.
And they helped our guy get to the hospital.
Yeah.
But there's a few other instances where things seemed a little like they were watching.
Yeah.
I don't believe it. I'm like, I mean, maybe, but who knows? Because while we were there, I think there was a lot of other, like, U.S. politicians there.
Huh.
And there's a lot of conversations happening because we saw a few groups of them. Like, I think they came by the triathlon, and then when we were touring, there was a few tours that we saw some U.S. officials. But yeah, that was a phenomenal experience. With that, going back to ESPN.
Yeah.
So with that, our group and the woman that was facilitating, she connected me to ESPN, and I talked to them and talked about, like, the experience of what, because that was before I went down, and so all the expectations and things that we had to do.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I'm embarrassed, like, in that moment, I'm like, when you asked them, like, I kind of, like, forgot that.
Yeah, I was just doing some research, like, oh, she was on ESPN one time, and then I was like, oh, I thought maybe it would just be, like, a link with, like, your time or something like that,
because
I assumed it was probably, or maybe it said it was the Cuba thing or something, but no, it was an entire, like, interview, an entire article on ESPN.com, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah, that felt, it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. So tell us about what you're doing now. Tell us about kind of your life, what you're doing for for your career, what your endurance athlete pursuits are like now?
So we are in year two. So 2 years ago, I left where I was and started my own studio, Movo Studio. And so we are a fitness studio in Duluth, and our focus is more high-intensity fusion classes, from HIIT classes, yoga HIIT classes, yoga sculpt. We'll sprinkle a little bit of yoga in there, but our focus is more high-intensity workouts. And then we still have our run club that is associated with that, because that's still, like, my link of having that connection into, like, the running world. I mean, I have lots of connections into it, but that's still, like, a special link of, like, we'll have that.
Career-wise, anyways.
Where is your studio located?
We are located downtown Duluth, off of First Street.
Off of First Street, okay. Yep, cool.
206 East First Street. Cool. Right next to the farm. I keep wanting to say the juice farm, but they've switched to the farm. Yeah, because they've expanded their menu. So that's kind of fun to, like, be able to have that collaboration with them and, like, be close to one another.
I like their stuff, actually. It's
really
good.
They do a phenomenal job.
Yeah.
So that's really... That takes up all of my time now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Of... Right now, it's just me doing everything of, like, marketing, sales, payroll. I have an accountant that helps with that. Yeah. That's very much above my head when it comes to that. So, I mean, it takes up a lot of my time. And especially now of having to pivot with COVID-19, that's been a... Now that we're almost 5 months into this, it's I can look back and even through those tears and... You know, anxiety and frustration and unknown. I can start to 5 months later. I feel definitely like more stable of like what we're doing and how we've pivoted. Is to like, wow, okay. Looking back, I can now embrace those challenges of really learning how to keep a business going and how to pivot and. How to like practice non-attachment of things that you have expected or planned and continuing to just, okay, that didn't happen. Let's keep moving forward. And how do we move forward? And even if I kind of like fumble and like face plant through it a few times, being able to like pick myself up, I think going back to like race scenarios, you know, when you come to like one that I've come to is like, you can train and train, you have your conditions, but really come race day, you have zero control of what weather is going to give you. If you're going to embrace waves or currents, or if the race has to get canceled, or if you're, you know, there's so many things that can happen in a race that are out of your control.
Like if, and Glenn Jorgensen shows up.
You can't control that. And so I think about, there's been a lot of times those race scenarios like, okay, I didn't have control then, but I just kept my pace and I kept going. So I think that helps me now. That's been helping me a lot with running Movo is even if there's unknowns or I'm not sure if I feel like I'm kind of fumbling through it or if I'm nervous, just keep my pace and just put one foot in another and keep going and have my mantra and as people pass or whatever, that's okay. Just keep your pace. That has been helping me a lot. So that's where I'm at career-wise now. And even it's hard, like before COVID, I was already starting to plan like, okay, how do I start to even pivot here so I can start to have roles so it's not me doing everything? And how do we actually grow into a bigger company?
Cool.
And so I'm still thinking about that, but it's had to shift a little bit.
Are you doing in-person classes now, or why? I just don't even know the situation.
We're mostly virtual. In the state of Minnesota, for gyms and studios, we could be open to 25% capacity. For us, that's five people. And it's really, for everything that has to go into, like, cleaning, safety, I would pay my instructors more, it's not worth it.
Right.
So we've stayed with virtual, but it's summer. It's beautiful out. So we've been doing outdoor classes where we can have classes up to 25, but we've capped it at 10 so that we can still just really ensure lots of space in between people.
Yeah.
Cool. So that's what we're doing right now. And We'll continue doing that probably through the end of summer in Duluth. Even if COVID wasn't happening, August is our slowest month because it's gorgeous right here. People want to get outside and do things outside, and yeah. I think they're trying to get, like, this is my take on it, but, you know, what are all the last trips we can do before, like, fall routines start?
Yeah, absolutely.
August is really slow for us anyway in studios. So I'm like, why don't we just take advantage of being outside? And, you know, there are pros, even though there's tech issues with Zoom calls and internet and connections, but it's been actually kind of nice of some of the silver linings. Like, we've had some people that live in the North Shore area where they'd come into the studio, but they've said, Jess, it's actually kind of nice to, I don't have a 20-25 minute drive into the studio. I don't have to look or pay for parking. I can just open my phone, my computer and work out.
Right.
And so even locally, I think that's been a nice perk for people. Or now if they're traveling, like, hey, I'm still at my cabin, but I can open up the screen and work out with you live.
Right.
It's still not quite the same, but I think we're all kind of getting more used to it. I'll speak for myself at least.
Well, so I think with races, my speculation, and this is purely speculative, but I think we're going to see way more virtual events continue on next year, in the future, kind of in conjunction with in-person events. Do you foresee Movo Studio continuing on with virtual? Additionally, so I mean, you already have the infrastructure, you've already tested with it, and do you see that just moving forward, even if when you can have full capacity and everything?
Definitely, because I think we've had, like, some people that have moved out of the city, and so this has been great for them to, like, rejoin us. We have like an on-demand site, so we can record workouts, and people that have memberships can have that, like, even if they're not able to make a class, they can go to our on-demand site, turn on any workout from, like, we have 20 to 60 minute workouts, full body to specific muscle groups that they can do. And we've started to, like, just even expand. We have some of my friends from London tune in every Monday. And my sister-in-law is tuning in from the East Coast, like, almost every day. And we have a few other, like, throughout our team who have invited their friends. We have people from around the country that are joining us, and they've expressed that they want to keep doing this. So it's cool. Like, I hadn't really thought, like, there's even more potential. So there's, like, a really big silver lining for me outside of this pivot of, like, this is something that we can continue to offer and even expand our reach even more. There's still very much, like, within the last 5 months, we've switched platforms 3 times. So we started the first, like, immediately I had a Thinkific account, because at one time I toyed with the idea of, like, making courses online. Never put the time into it, but I had this account. So I quick pivoted, like, cool, I don't have to pay for anything else. It's already set up. Let's just start putting workouts on there. But for me, it didn't feel like quite the right platform. So then we switched to NamaStream, where we can upload videos. It's searchable by style, instructor, time. But then that turned out to be not the smoothest from an administrative side of being able to, like,
troubleshoot.
So then we moved everything back to Mindbody. But I think there's even a better platform. So I'm still searching of, like, when it comes to, like, our virtual and on demand, there could be an even better site for that as we move forward. And so
now what about athletically, like, training, racing? I mean, are you doing any of that? Are you just staying fit? I mean, you said
just
that
staying fit.
You said Movo takes up all your time. That's a pretty definitive
it definitely is. After looking, like, I felt kind of good, you know, like, okay, I finished pretty good that last year. And then I realized, like, part of me was a little bit burnt out of it as well, of, like, the consistent, you know, couple hours a day, and it, I think, I got to that point of burnout a little bit, even though I absolutely love it, and I still, like, miss it. At this point, I'm not ready to go back, just because Movo takes up so much time. But that is a hope to eventually, like, get back to it. But it has been really nice to just run for enjoyment and, like, push myself in a few workouts a couple times a week, but more just for the enjoyment of it and letting go of that, even though I'm still super competitive. But sometimes at the end of my career, I felt like I was getting super stressed if I didn't keep a certain pace or time or accomplish something. So it's been nice to let go of some of those expectations and get back to why I initially got into endurance sports, running in triathlon, is just that joy of actually performing the sport.
The outlet, so, whatever. Yeah.
It's been cool to reconnect in that way of like just running to go out and run and hopping on my bike to just bike. It's been nice. Lake Superior has been so warm the past few weeks. Mm-hmm. So just hopping in the lake and swimming and just feeling that motion of the water flowing by you and the sounds, it's been really enjoyable to get back to the heart of why I love those sports.
Right.
It's really interesting to me, Jess, to hear you say those things, because when I think of Jess Rossi and I think of a fitness instructor and an athlete yourself, but I think first thing I think is someone who's able to reframe things in a positive light in all situations. And I think that's a huge strength of yours that I know of anyway, and I don't know you super well, but that's one thing that I've always kind of admired, kind of just watched from the outside in watching, both again as an athlete, as an instructor too. And I don't know, for our listeners, I really can't hardly recommend Jessica enough as a fitness instructor, because I think you do a tremendous job.
Thank you. So, that means a lot. That really does. Thank you. Yeah.
Cool. I have one more question, actually, and it's not even endurance sports related, but it gets back to the thing where you said that you'll say like yes to anything. I want to talk about your application to be on the show Alt for Norga.
Oh. Oh, man.
I think I saw that YouTube video or something at Anger Tower.
So, I'm like 50% Scandinavian. I've done the 23andMe genetic testing, and I'm like 100% European, 50% Scandinavian. My aunt likes that show.
Yeah, it's a great show.
What's the show? I missed that.
It's like a super cheesy
TV show from Norway. So you can only watch it on YouTube. There's like a season or two on YouTube. Yeah. It's the only place I've ever seen it anyway. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead, Jess.
And they just have challenges, and like the winner wins a large sum of money, but then they also, the show will do your family tree for you, and that's part of like the final episode is they'll take you through your family history and take you to those spots, and you might get to meet people or at least just see where your family came from in Norway.
Cool.
So my aunt sent me this, like, Jessica, you should apply for it. I'm like, yeah, of course. Yeah, I will. Yeah. So I went down to, I like filled out all the stuff on the casting call, and they had live casting in Minneapolis at the Mall of America.
Yeah.
So I drove down to Minneapolis, got in line, went through the casting. They just like had a line of us along a bench and like would ask us questions about ourselves and then recording it. And then I think it was like a week or two later, they sent me an email like, hey, we'd love to learn more about you. Can you make a video of like just showing your home to us and kind of your daily life and routine? Hmm. So I made that video and I sent it to them. And that was like one of my good friends. We went to Anger Tower. We had like just had a snowstorm, so we had a lot of fun of just being goofy with it, like snowshoeing down from Anger Tower with like flags and showing like, see, this is where I'm at. I'm like in a very Scandinavian town.
Right.
I like represent this, and to be a part of it, you have to have like Norwegian descent and have never been to Norway.
Okay.
It's like one of the rules of the game.
Right.
And so it was really fun, and I kind of like just being goofy and silly too, so it was fun to make that video and put it together and send it to them, but I didn't get a call back after that.
Yeah.
So that's as far as it went. But I still get, from the casting company, I'll still get an email from them every time there's a new season. Do you want to reapply?
Huh.
There's been a few times I'm like, maybe. Uh-huh. That would still be really fun. But I feel like at this point in my life, like I couldn't be gone for three months at a time.
Three months?
I think it's like a substantial time period while like the whole show is
filmed in Norway. Obviously.
Yeah, it's filmed in Norway, and
so it was like a good time chunk that you'd be gone. Maybe not 3 months, like I think that was the max. But and then you just really have like zero contacts. You can't like give away the show at all. So those were some like the rules. I'm like, I just can't do that quite now.
Funny.
Yeah, but who knows? Maybe one day I'll reapply again.
It's a long life, as they say.
Right? Yeah. There's like talking about shows. My Olympic hopes. I saw this past winter there was an application, like an Olympic hopeful, to apply for it, but they're looking for very specific sports. Huh. Like, I think it was luge, bobsled, speed skating, and rowing. And I was like, well, I don't know. Maybe I'd be great at those.
Speed skating?
I don't think I could do luge, though. I think that's, like, really is spooky to me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not that risk much of a risk taker anymore.
Speed skating would be the one.
Think I'm like, maybe that's it. So like, I had to like do all these tests in my house, like, what's your broad jump, what's your height jump, what's like your 20 meter sprint. So I like timed all that out and like gave my, you know, story, athletic story. And they've been emailing a lot, but because of COVID, they're like, this season, we're not doing it this season, but we'll keep you posted for like 2021.
Nice.
So
that
who knows,
show
maybe
soon
you'll
enough.
See me on some reality show.
Yeah, <that's so> funny.
At some point in the future.
Yeah, right. Cool.
You have anything else, Mike? Any other questions?
I think that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Jess.
Yeah, thank you so much for like having me here. It honestly is fun to just like sit down and chat with you all. And
it really is. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate this opportunity.
You bet.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, and that wraps up episode number 23 of the Duluth Rundown podcast. Our thanks to Jessica Rossing for joining us for the interview section. It's always good to hear from Jess. And Mike, do you have anything to close with?
I guess I'll close with what I say every time is just get out and run, people. Beautiful July running conditions, and enjoy it, and I guess we'll see you next time.
See ya.